Fikudei HaMishkan Mishkan HaEdus Asher Pukad Alpi Moshe Avodas Halviim Biad Isamar Ben Aharon HaKohen. These are the reckonings of the Mishkan of Testimony, which were reckoned by Moshe's bidding. The labor of the Levites was under the authority of Itamar, son of Aharon the Kohen. OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Pekudei, but also for the month of Adar Bet. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 30th day of Adar Aleph, which is the first day of the two-day Rosh Chodesh of Adar Bet. Little confusing. Corresponding to 5776, corresponding to March 10th. Okay, that having been said, let's first say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, and then we'll continue with the track that started the show. It is from an album I just got yesterday called Purim in Jerusalem 2 by Chilik Frank, a very, very talented clarinet player. And this track is a Nigun, it's called Nigun Shoshanat. Probably Nigun of Shoshanat Yaakov. Karlin Chasidim. Okay, but we'll get back to that after Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. It's Rosh Chodesh today. No Tachanun today. And our custom on the show is to do Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, Psalm 121. Sometime I've explained it in the past, but sometime I'll explain it again why we switch. It's sort of a little bit arbitrary, but it just helps us mark the difference between days that we say Tachanun and days that we don't. Both 130 and 121 come from the 15 Songs of Ascent. This one, 121, starts Shir Lama Alot. All the others start Shir Hama Alot, a song to the ascents, a song of ascents. And both of them are what I feel are generic prayers to God for things that trouble us. So this one particularly, we say, Esa Einai El Heharim, I will raise my eyes to the mountains. Whence will come my help? And the answer, my help is from Hashem, maker of heaven and earth. And that's the flavor of this particular chapter of Tehillim. And looking at the last couple of days and the increase in the terror attacks, especially when Vice President Joe Biden was here, and various reactions, we need to ask God for help. Shir Lama Alot, Esa Einai El Heharim, May Ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me Im Adonai Osei Shamayim Vaaretz. Al Yitein Lamot Raglecha Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum Velo Yishan Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomerecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yeminecha. Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmoret nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'yad olam. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya ha'omidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha ha'makom yirachem alehem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. Okay, I mentioned the 30th of Adar Aleph, which is today. It's rare. Well, I shouldn't say rare. It happens 7 times out of every 19 years. And February 29th is rarer. And there are also the 30th of Mar Cheshvan and the 30th of Kislev, which are variables. But the 30th of Adar Rishon, today's date, has a special halachic issue when it comes to a boy born on that day for his bar mitzvah. Other things are solvable by equivocating. A yahrzeit, for example, if there are 2 possible dates to commemorate the death, so you do both. But a bar mitzvah boy needs to know when he could be called to the Torah for an aliyah. And the question applies to anyone who was born today, a boy, to a boy who is celebrating his 8th birthday today or his 11th birthday. Those are the 3 ages where the bar mitzvah issue is actual. Anyone older than 11 either wasn't born in a Shana Me'uberet, or was, and the bar mitzvah is also a Shana Me'uberet, or he's past bar mitzvah. So we're focusing on the boy born today, and mazel tov to the parents and the family, a boy who is celebrating his 8th Hebrew birthday today, and a one who's celebrating his 11th. The 11th in 2 years will celebrate his bar mitzvah, which will not be, according to our pattern, a 2 Adar year, which means in his bar mitzvah year, there isn't a 30th of any Adar, let alone a 30th of a first Adar. There's only 1 Adar, and the 1 Adar has 29 days. I hope you're following this. The boy who is 8 today will have his bar mitzvah in 5 years' time, also in a Shana Peshuta, without a Lamed Adar Aleph. So the question is, when do they officially reach the age of mitzvot? And no surprise, there are two opinions. One opinion says that the 30th of Adar, Rishon, follows the 29th of Adar, Rishon. When you have only one Adar, the day that follows the 29th of Adar is Aleph Nisan, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And there is an opinion that says that's his bar mitzvah date. The other opinion, which is the more common one, says that the 30th of Adar Aleph is the first day of the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh of Adar Sheni. When you have only one Adar, its Rosh Chodesh is also 2 days, and the first of those 2 days is the 30th of Shavat. It sounds a little odd that that would be the preferred opinion, but apparently it is. So whatever you have, if you are born today, 8 years old today, or 11 today, make sure your family asks a competent Rav for when you celebrate your bar mitzvah. The guy that's 11 today is going to start sometime in the next year to go over his sedra, so he would certainly want to know now. I don't think the 8-year-old has to worry about it yet, and the person born today certainly doesn't. And if we have a Sanhedrin by the time they become B'nai Mitzvah, Bari Mitzvah, then all bets are off, because any given year can be or not. And there's no pattern of the one Adar and two Adars like we have. It's a rough similarity, 7 and 19 years, but specifically which one can vary. This I've spoken about before, but I'll just use this year as an example. Had we not followed the pattern, and had it been a Sanhedrin to make a decision, they could have left this year with one Adar, and next year would have to be two Adars, because Pesach is still going to make it into the spring, even if you didn't add the extra month, and adding the extra month pushes it further into the spring. In any event, enough said on that, and let's proceed. The other calendar issue, which is an issue for every year, is the pattern of the special Shabbatot. Last week we had Parshat Shkalim. Next week we have Parshat Zachor. And that means that this Shabbat between the two is called a Hafsaka, a break in the sequence of the four special Shabbatot. It does not happen in every year. There are some years where it's possible to have Shkalim and the following Shabbat is already Zachor, but mostly there is a break between Shkalim and Zachor, and this is it. After Zachor comes Para, which sometimes there's a break and sometimes not. This year there is a break, also a second break, between Parshat Zachor next week. The following week will be the day after Purim in Yerushalayim, 2 days after regular Purim, and the following week will be Para. The fourth of the special Parshiot is HaChodesh, always follows the week after Para. By definition, Parshat Para is read on the Shabbat before Parshat HaChodesh is read, so there could never be a break there. Most years have one break, which means the four parshiot cover a 5-week period. And on this type of year, there are two breaks, which means a 6-week period for the special Shabbatot. The next part of this, for those who like this kind of trivia, is Pekudei. Pekudei, this week's Sedra, is separated from its usual partner of Hayakel, and that happens in all Shana Mu'uberet, all two Adar years, and it even happens in a certain year type, in a regular year with one Adar, that they are separated. This has to do with the fine-tuning of the calendar and to make sure that we are ready for Bereshit after Vezot HaBracha and Simchat Torah the way we should. So it depends on exactly the number of Shabbatot of the year. We are in a year now that is called a Mu'uberet Shalem. A Mu'uberet Shalem has 355 plus 30, it's 385 days. 385 days, 385 is divisible by 7, which means there are exactly 55 weeks with no leftovers, 55 weeks in this kind of year. And that means that there is exactly 55 of each day of the week, including 55 Shabbatot. But depending upon how many of those Shabbats are Chag, you will need plus or minus, and that has to do with the ones that break apart and the ones that are combined, and it's a little bit more complicated than that. Leave it to say now that Parshat Pekudei, which is not a special Shabbat, but a break, is on the rare side. The last time we had that was 13 years ago. I had to go back to Torah Tidbits issue number 560 to find what I had written about this situation so I didn't have to create it all over again. And I polished it, and it's in this week's Torah Tidbits. But it's a curiosity of the calendar. Now, the topic makes it more curious is what Haftorah do you say? When Pekudei with Vayakhel is a special Shabbat, then the Haftorah gets preempted and you read the special Haftorah. And that happens when they are combined. When they are separated, one or the other is a special Shabbat. This year, Vayakhel was last week. That meant that you didn't read the Haftorah of Vayakhel. And part of the unusual character of the cycle of the Haftorahs is that the Haftorah reading for Vayakhel continues to the Haftorah reading of Pekudei. They are continuous in the Navi of Malachim Bet. And therefore, Minhag Yerushalayim developed, or Minhag Eretz Yisrael, that on Pekudei, which is a hafsakah, a break in the sequence, where Vayakhel's Haftorah was not read, Pekudei's Haftorah gets combined with Vayakhel's, or Vayakhel's gets attached to the beginning of Pekudei, and we read them both because they are continuous in the Navi. And they both deal with the Beit HaMikdash, which makes it an appropriate counterpoint to both the topics of Vayakhel and of Pekudei. With Vayakhel, we had no choice. We didn't read its Haftorah because of Shkalim. So both of them get read here. Now, further for your trivial interest, your interest in trivia, at least it's Jewish trivia, is that outside of Eretz Yisrael, they read the Haftorah of Vayakhel, followed just by two psukim of Pekudei, of Pekudei's Haftorah, not the whole thing, because the rest of the Haftorah of Pekudei, except for the first two psukim, is the Haftorah of the second day of Sukkot, which gives us a problem in Israel because we don't have a Haftorah on our second day of Sukkot because it isn't Yom Tov. It's already Chol HaMoed. So you see, whether you followed this or not, it's kind of complicated. And to me, not only complicated, but fun. Hope you agree, or some of you anyway. I have about 2.5 minutes left on this first half. So let me give you another trivia kind of thing, totally different. The word Pekudei, beginning with the letter P, sounds like the letter P in English. When the dot drops out of the pe, it's a fe, which sounds like the letter F, as in falafel or French fries. So the parsha is Pekudei, But the opening words of the parsha are Ela Fikudei, because after a word that ends in a silent hey, in the same phrase, a word, the second word, will lose its dagesh kal from its first letter. Could be a bet, or a gimel, or a dalid, or a kaf, or a pei, or a taf. And it becomes noticeable because Eile Fikudei Hamishkan Fikudei. Now, what to me is fun with that is the fact that there are a few other prominent pay words which lose the dot in the pay, and it comes out a little odd. For example, in Parshat Parah, where the Torah speaks of the command to take a fara aduma with an F sound, fara aduma, because it's v'yikhu'elecha fara aduma, and it follows a chaf with a kamatz, which is like a silent A, even though it doesn't have a silent A, and it loses it. In Megillat Esther coming up, you have a drum roll after describing the holiday, and it says, Al Kain, therefore, all of the above, Karu Layamim Ha'ele, they called these days Furim. Not even Purim. We say Purim because the Dagesh goes back when you don't have a reason to drop it. But in the Megillah, where you hear the drum roll, Al Kain Karu Layamim Ha'ele, after the silent A, Furim, Al Shem HaPur, based on the Pur of Haman throwing lots. So to me, those are odd kind of things and fun to point out. The person that I put with them is the general of the army of Avimelech, the king of Pelishtim, whose name is Pichol, but he's always called Fichol because it's U Fichol Tsar Tzva'o. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Pekudei. Listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Pekudei and for the beginning of Chodesh Adar Bet, the Adar that has Purim in it. And I decided to give you that whole track, a little over 2 minutes, from that Chilik Frank album, Purim in Jerusalem 2, just to keep the flavor and the mood of Purim coming up. Now, this particular track was Hodu Lashem Kito Kili Olam Chasto, and if you know that that's from Hallel, and you know that we don't say Hallel on Purim, then it seems a little bit out of place, but it isn't, and it's certainly in place today, tomorrow, Rosh Chodesh Adar, when we do say Hallel. So that was part of the reason that I chose that particular track. Speaking of track, let's get back on track now for Parshat Pekudei. As I've said in weeks past, Teruma Tetzaveh, the first third of Ki Tisa, dealt with the Mishkan, the Kohen Gadol's garments, everything in the Mishkan and everything about the Mishkan. Then came the tragic episode of the golden calf, followed by Moshe's receiving of God's forgiveness on behalf of Bnei Israel. And then in Vayakhel and Pekudei, they get back on track, so to speak, in actually building the Mishkan, fashioning all the vessels therein, enrobing the Kohanim as commanded. And that brings us to Pekudei. That's part of Pekudei. But the beginning of Pekudei, there is an accurate accounting of the precious metals that were collected. And commentaries point out that even though Moshe Rabbeinu was certainly trustworthy, a public official who handles public funds must give an accurate, honest, transparent accounting of that which was collected. So you have here towards the beginning, Kol HaZahav, all of the silver, HaAsui LaMelacha, that was meant for the work in the Mishkan, Bechol Melechet HaKodesh, and all of the holy endeavors, Vayhi Zahav HaTenufa, and it gives the amount. Teshav Esrim Kikar, 29 talents of gold, Ushva Me'ot Ushloshim Shekel, and 730 shekel, b'shekel hakodesh, and then the silver, and then the copper. Now, I probably made this statement last week, and I'll make it again now. It's an important thing to keep in mind. There is a flavor of Melechet HaMishkan, the building of the Mishkan, the Mikdash, the tabernacle, of spontaneous donation of materials, metals, and fabric that people had brought with them from Egypt. And there was an enthusiasm that shows up in the generous giving to the point where Moshe has to have an announcement made throughout the camp for people to stop giving because the artisans in charge of all of the work have determined that they had more than they need of these materials. The one exception is silver. The silver was collected by a head tax, and a poor person couldn't give less, a rich person couldn't give more, and that language is for all generations, not just for the generation that came out of Egypt. It's unlikely that you had a situation of poverty there because everybody was in this experience together. But these rules are set down for all generations. The point is that silver was mostly used in the foundation blocks of the Mishkan. And the idea that the entire community has equally shared the burden of the foundation of the Mishkan allows the walls and the plating of the walls and the accoutrements inside the Mishkan and out and the Mizbeach and everything else can be by generous donations according to one's heart's desire to give. But the foundation, the basis, is the silver. And therefore the silver was not kol asher nediv libo, anyone whose heart motivated him to give. It was everyone giving the silver half shekel. We have two commemoratives of this mitzvah. We do not have the mitzvah without a Beit HaMikdash. We have two things that commemorate it. One was the reading of Parshat Shekalim last Shabbat, and the other is coming up right before Megillah reading in the afternoon of Ta'anit Esther, for those people who live out of Yerushalayim, and the following afternoon, evening, before Megillah reading for those in Jerusalem, to give Zecher L'Machatzit HaShekel, commemorative of the silver half shekel. Now, I don't know if next week we'll be spending more time about Purim, so I don't know if I'll get to this, so I'll say it now. The custom developed to give a half coin of the realm. Back in the States, I remember, half dollar. Half dollar is not a half shekel. It doesn't have to be. It's the half of the currency of the country. Our half dollar was called a half dollar, as opposed to the 50 pence coin in England, which is not spoken of as being a half of a pound, but it's 50p. Now, there is an opinion that says, as long as the coin is half value of some other coin, then it qualifies to commemorate the silver half shekel, machatzit shekel. And others say, no, it has to be known as a half. In Israel, our currency is called the shekel. We have a half shekel coin, and the custom is to give not one, not two, but three half shekel coins. This is based on the fact that the word teruma l'Hashem, a donation to God, is mentioned three times in the portion of Shkalim. So the custom developed to give three half coins. So we give three half shekel coins, which totals only a shekel and a half. Not a lot of money. There's a further custom to give the value of the original silver half shekel. It has been calculated that the original silver half shekel is equivalent to 9.6 grams of silver. At today's silver price and the shekel exchange rate, the value of the original half shekel comes to little less than 20 shekel in Israel. 20 shekel is also not that much money, but giving 20 shekel in addition to the shekel and a half, or could be included with the shekel and a half, an additional 18 and a half shekel, bringing it to a round number of 20 shekel as a contribution to the Zecher L'Machatzit HaShekel. Now, I have to point out, this is in addition to the Purim day mitzvah of giving matanot le'evyonim, gifts to the poor. And the Zecher L'Machatzit HaShekel is collected by many, many different institutions for their funding. And most people will come with pockets of change or bills and give something here, something there, something there, something there to the charities that they like giving to. But that's a special thing. Now, what makes it even more special, besides the fact that on a practical level, the shekalim were collected in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, Adar time, Purim time, is the fact that there is a piece of the story of Purim that Haman, who wanted to destroy every man, woman, and child, the nation of Mordechai, goes to Ahasuerus and says, there are these people scattered throughout your kingdom, and it really doesn't pay for you to keep them alive. And if you give me permission to destroy these Jews, I will donate to the king's coffers the sum of 10,000 silver talents. 10,000 silver talents, by a certain calculation, matches the half shekel of the 600,000 Jews who came out of Egypt. And the notion of giving to charity today, commemorative of the silver half shekel, is to say Haman wanted to give mucho shkalim for our destruction, but we already have the mitzvah of giving machatzit ha-shekel for the communal needs, and today the commemorative of the machatzit ha-shekel in the form of zecher le-machatzit ha-shekel. Back to Pekudei. After the reckoning of the gold, silver, and copper, and what they were used for, we have the fashioning of the garments of the Kohen Gadol and the regular Kohen, 8 garments for the Kohen Gadol, 4 garments for the regular Kohen. This is an ongoing mitzvah throughout the generations. Unfortunately, we are not fulfilling that mitzvah today because we don't have a Beit HaMikdash with Kohanim doing the service there, but it's still on the books, and Amir Tzashem will have it active someday soon. And then they started doing all of the parts of the Mishkan, the Aron, and the Shulchan, and the Menorah, and the Mizbeach, and the other Mizbeach, and the Kior V'Kano, and the wall boards of the Mishkan, and the coverings of the Mishkan, and everything else that went with it. The Torah makes a point of saying after each item that the people carried out the instructions, Ka'asher Tziva Hashem et Moshe. Ka'asher Tziva Hashem et Moshe. Ka'asher Tziva Hashem et Moshe. As God commanded Moshe, over and over again. On the face of it, this is a compliment to the people of Israel, who were meticulous in doing the things they were supposed to do according to the way that God commanded Moshe to tell them to do it. On the other hand, there's an implied criticism by saying, this time you take gold and you do things ka'asher tziva Hashem et Moshe, as God commanded Moshe, but what happened a couple of months back when you took gold, not as God commanded Moshe, and the result was the Egel HaZahav, the golden calf. It is unavoidable, I've said this also over the weeks now, it is unavoidable to see the Mishkan as an atonement for, as a tikkun, repair for, Cheto Egel. That is not the only thing the Mikdash does, but it is a significant feature of its existence that it gives a kosher outlet for the spiritual and religious energies that were perverted in the golden calf fiasco. After all the detail comes a sort of summary statement, and that is, Kechol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe, kein asu b'nei Yisrael et kol ha'avodah. As God commanded Moshe, so did the children of Israel actually do all of their avodah. Vayar Moshe, Moshe saw, et kol ha'malacha, all of the work. V'hine asu ota ka'asher tziva Hashem, Kain Asu, Vayavorech Otam Moshe. And as a result, Moshe blesses the people. But you have to be struck by the repetition listen to it in English and you'll see what I'm talking about. Like everything that God commanded Moshe, so did the children of Israel perform all the labor. Moshe saw the entire work, and behold, they had done it as Hashem had commanded, so had they done. There's a redundancy in there, but it's on purpose to emphasize and to emphasize again the fact that the people now were on the straight and narrow path, doing exactly as they have been commanded. Now comes the next phase. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe l'mor. God says to Moshe, saying, on the first day of the first month, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Takim et HaMishkan, et Mishkan Ohel Moed, you shall erect the Mishkan, and you shall put the Aron in it, and put the Peruchet on it. And he gave the final plans. All of the parts of the Mishkan are now ready to go, and God commands Moshe how to put it all together. And then the next phase, first before that, the final verse in that section, again, Vayas Moshe, Kechol Asher Tziva Hashem Oto Kein Asa. Moshe did all that God had commanded him, so he did. That double language again. And then Vayehi B'Chodesh HaRishon, it was on in the first month of the second year, on the first of the month, Hukam HaMishkan, the Mikdash, the Mishkan, was erected. Moshe was the one who did it, and he put down the foundation stones and set the boards into it and covered it with the coverings, and then he took the Luchot and put it into the Aron, and he put the carrying poles in the Aron, which were to stay there always, and he put the lid on the Aron above it, and it continues and goes through the actual setting up of the Mishkan. At the very end of the Sedra, which is not only the end of the Sedra, it's the end of the book of Shemot, the Torah tells us, Vayechas he'anan et ohel moed, a cloud covered the Mishkan, uchvod Hashem malei et ha-Mishkan, and God's glory filled the Mishkan. V'lo yachol Moshe, Moshe was not able, lavo el ohel moed, ki shachan alav he'anan, uchvod Hashem malei et ha-Mishkan, because the clouds and the glory of God filled the Mishkan. Uvehealot he'anan me'al ha-Mishkan yis'u b'nei Yisrael b'chol ma'sehem. This is something that we read in more detail later, that cloud was not just for covering the Mishkan at this first point, but it was that which, when it lifted, was a sign that the people should travel. And if it did not lift, they didn't travel, because Anan Hashem al HaMishkan Yomam ve'esh tiheh laila bo le'enei chol b'nei Yisrael b'chol ma'sehem, throughout their wandering in the wilderness, which has not been set chronologically yet at 40 years, but that's what we know, of course. And that became the way of traveling. So you have the conclusion of the book of Shemot, started with Shibud Mitzrayim, enslavement to Egypt, and ends with the high and lofty labors of those former slaves who are now free people, but not free to be servants of God. And they work hard at putting this Mishkan together and everything involved in it in service of God. So it's a very significant transition throughout the book of Shemot that brings us to this point. We have to wait for next week, when God finally calls to Moshe to come, and then the book of Vayikra takes over in its role as Torah Kohanim. I probably should not end on the note that I'm going to end. I should have said some of this before, but I don't want someone to perceive that we are oblivious to what's going on. First of all, on the nice side, it is a beautiful, beautiful sunny day. Not a cloud in the sky. It's already 4:25 in the afternoon on Thursday, first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet, and all is looking good, but there is that heaviness that is felt by all people here with the reports of stabbings and shootings and various other terrorist attacks. And these are things that we need to intensify our prayer, that God help stop it and guide our leaders to do the right thing in bringing these things to an end. On that note, I wish you Chodesh Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameh.